Blog Talk Radio.
Matrix, 923, I'll give you a correct address, but you have a fire in a one-story, ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. Get your traffic control, squad 5. And go to 273-273.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Firefighter Wellness Radio here on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. My guest tonight is Doug Monda and I believe Karen Monda from Survive First Foundation. So, Doug, why don't you tell the guests a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Karen and a little bit about Survive First.
Okay. First of all, thanks for having us. We're honored to be part of your program. So myself, I'm Doug Monda, and my wife, Karen, we live in Central Florida. I am a recently retired narcotics agent. And I have a history and background of depression, and suicide for the short version of that. And what we've done in the past years after personal experiences and being in the industry, we developed and with a team of other people, obviously, the Survive First Foundation. My wife is the director of communications, and I am the director and founder of Survive First. And what we do is we are primarily a, for lack of better terms, a helping hand to first responders. We are a resource of families, first responders and their families, that are in need of from the basics of somebody to talk to the most important thing, and that is getting healthy via a treatment center. We provide education and training and resources to first responders and their families so that they can improve their lifestyles.
Wow. How long have you been doing this now?
I have been, I'm looking at Karen, so 3 years. So I, I'm sorry, Mark. Karen's the one, she's good with remembering days and numbers. I went to treatment, I think in 2014, after a suicide attempt, and I went to South Florida. And when I came back to work, my employers were amazing, and they supported me and helped me get through it. And when I came back to work, it was amazing how everybody in the community and the area that I work in, how they saw that if somebody could go through what I went through, being in the position that I was in, was able to return to work. And it like dropped the barrier of the stigma. And I started receiving phone calls daily. Hey, I need some advice. Can you help me? What did you deal with? That type of stuff. And that's what led me to it. And then the next thing, I was presented from a couple of organizations. Hey, can you come help us out? Can you speak to us? Can you come and tell us your story, and that's what started it, and that's what brought us to where we're at today.
Hi, Mark. It's Karen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So that led us to really where we are today with Survive First, and Survive First was actually founded this year. So we've kind of hit the ground running, and we have been just honored and very pleased to be able to help a lot of first responders so far, one even being today that Doug was able to help. So we're just very honored to be able to serve our first responders and give back to them.
Now, Doug, you speak pretty freely about what you went through and the suicide attempt and going into treatment. Was about 3 years ago now, and you said that your employer was really kind of supportive of that. Karen, can you talk a little bit, if you don't mind, a little bit of how that impacted you as far as with him going and getting help? Because I know a lot of times on the show, I have the first responders on here or the places that help, you know, and not very often do I have, you know, what the family was going through and with you being on the show. And Doug seems to be freely about, you know, talking about that. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that, how that was for you?
Absolutely. As with any family going through that, it's tough. You don't want to see a loved one go through anything traumatic like that. You don't want to see them depressed. You certainly, though, don't want to see your loved one, your spouse, any family member, even friend, get to a point where they feel like they need to leave this world. It was difficult. It was sad. One thing that I did for myself was I poured myself into educating myself on what depression mm-hmm. is, what PTSD is, how so that I could be a better help when he came home, and be a better mm-hmm. support. It was a learning process for both of us. We both had to work together, to really get to where, you know, where things are today. I think it really is a whole, it's a family dynamic when something like this happens, a whole family approach to getting healthy, because it impacts the entire family. It's not just the one person who's going through it, the first responder, it's the whole family. So, we were very fortunate to be able to understand that we had to approach it that way and support each other and understand that it's, you know, there's treatment, but it's not an immediate fix. You have to work through things and do your homework.
Yeah. Now, Doug, you also talked a little bit about a training, and I follow your Facebook page, and just recently you did something at a department. Can you talk a little bit about the trainings that you do, or was that just speaking at departments?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I just got home a few minutes ago. I was asked this morning to come to a department and speak, and I don't know if you're familiar with Colonel Danny McKnight from Black Hawk Down. I did it with him, and we had an amazing day. I'm super excited, and we got to reach out to several first responders. But basically, with my background in law enforcement, even though I was an agent and a police officer for many years, I worked with firefighters and EMTs and probation and corrections and, mm-hmm. It's all one big family and everybody, kind of goes through the same thing. So I basically, what I've done is I'm going to the departments, and obviously PTSD is the big buzzword in the first responder community and that type of stuff. And so what I'm going out there and spreading the word on the signs, the symptoms, and the awareness. I'm real big on awareness and to make people aware, because when it happened to me, it had never happened in our arena, and if it did, nobody talked about it. And that was the biggest hurdle. And so what I'm doing is going out there and giving departments the tools to recognize it, be aware of it, and to try to prevent it before it happens. And as we all know, first responders, you know, suffer a lot from addiction, whether it be alcohol, drugs, prescription medication, and suicide, depression. And so since I've been through all those gamuts, I go there and basically say, hey, this is what I went through. This is what I've learned over the past few years. This is what's working for me. And, you know, give them that, that message of awareness.
Right. Now, do you guys also, when you do these trainings, is it just for the department, or is this something that family comes to as well? And Karen, do you also do any speaking or training with Doug?
So, yeah, the, you know, primarily I use the word first responders, but I've spoken to other, and you know, other people outside of the first responder, because everybody can relate to it. I say first responders,
yeah,
obviously, because that's the work field that I was in, but I have gone from, you know, I even had a mental health conversation with a veterinarian facility one day, and which was, you know, pretty awesome. I didn't realize that they struggled so much in that industry.
Huh.
But, you know, yeah, I do. You know, the message can go to anybody, and I'll let Karen fill you in. Yes, Karen does come with me to a lot of them, and she has a lot of valuable information for the spouses, you know. For example, for me, being, you know, she was my spouse, and she, you know, was living in a house with a, you know, as I use the term, a maniac at times, you know. And she's pretty amazing, but I'll let her chime in.
Yeah, I do. I like Doug said, I go with him quite a bit to the different departments that he speaks at or speaks to, and I support him in that way. And I talk to the first responders about the importance that their spouse plays in this whole role. Also, when we do have a first responder that calls us and is seeking help or seeking guidance or any resources, one of the important things that we tell them is that their spouse or even their girlfriend, boyfriend, they can contact me. We give them my contact information because I like to be there as a support, as a resource for them. And then if collectively we feel that they need more support from maybe a mental health counselor, then we can go ahead and connect them that way as well. You know, we also have some groups that we do for spouses where, you know, we connect weekly and just kind of talk about how we can support our first responders and how we can support each other.
Right. Now, Doug, when you can you look back at yourself now that you went through, you had your career and the things that you went through and what you came to the other side of, can you look back now and kind of see what was kind of the pivotal factor for you, maybe, you know, starting the depression, or was this something that was, that you, you know, was gradual, that just kind of it came into effect, or was there one kind of incident? You know, what can guys or, you know, first responders or the spouses look for in themselves if they start seeing, you know, maybe certain symptoms or signs that they maybe should, you know, get ahead of it so it doesn't get to a point where they may need like a residential treatment or something?
Right. Yeah, I can tell you two parts of that. I can, you know, I look back now at my career, and I had a great career. I was the leader of a SWAT team, one of the most crime-ridden cities in the nation, and we were very busy. sorry, Mark.
That's okay.
And, you know, to the best of my knowledge, I can only remember back so far. You know, maybe when I was younger, things added to it. You know, maybe I was when I was a kid, I didn't, you know, the typical, you know, I didn't have a great childhood, maybe could have played a factor. But I do remember that when I started my career, I was an athlete, and that's all I did. And I lived in Cocoa Beach, Florida at the time, and I was, you know, the typical Cocoa Beach kid. I was a surfer and surfed all day, every day. And when I first got into the industry, everybody made fun of me because every word out of my mouth was dude, and all I cared about was surfing. So I went from a surfer to a SWAT team guy and working narcotics. And anyway, I remember going into the industry as this very laid-back, happy guy. I mean, you know, like I would go to work and come home and surf and play with my sons and train. You know, I trained even as a 10-hour or a long work day. I trained 6 hours a day. I was an Ironman triathlete and a former pro soccer player. And so I was running marathons and Ironman triathlon. And the pivotal moment when I noticed it, and let me step back, I didn't realize the magnitude of the problem I had until it was catastrophic. And what took place was, over time, I got so consumed in work and the traumatic things that I experienced every day were weighing on me. And I had slowly entered this depression and removed myself from all the things I loved. And any first responder will understand this. You know, when you get home from work, you have all these intentions of doing things, but you get home and you're so mentally and physically exhausted that you hit the couch and you're done. And That I remember coming into play, and some other issues. Like one of the key things for me that I discovered was I was sent to Hurricane Katrina, obviously Louisiana. I was a sniper at the time. And for what I can talk about, it was not what you saw on TV. It was, you know, the parts of bodies floating down the street and things, those horrible things, that was true. And some of the stuff that we saw and we did was unforgettable. And I came home and I got back to business. And I guess that was, you know, things that I did in my career like that were weighing on me. And ultimately, it boiled ahead, you know, in 2014. And impacted me severely at a point that I didn't realize. The depression was so bad, I forgot who I really was. And as time goes on, we all do that. We change, you know. This happened in the teens of years that I worked in, you know, as an agent, SWAT guy. So, you know, do I have a pivotal moment? You know, there's a lot of memories of things that I've had to do in my career that I don't care to talk about or can't talk about. And the day-to-day stuff is radical. That's the best word I can explain it. Whether you're a firefighter, whether you're a police officer, whether you're a school teacher or a banker, and I always tell everybody, on a scale of 1 to 10 of stress, a 10 is a 10, period. So whether you're, you know, for me being in a shootout, I used to love that stuff. So that, you know, that wasn't that stressful for me, but for somebody else, that would be stressful. Now, put me in a classroom full of kids and I'd jump off a cliff, you know? So the stress and the totality of circumstances, usually the term I use, of all that, what I'm getting at is no matter what you do or where you're at, the totality of the circumstances that build up over time is really what brought me to my knees. Am I clear? I mean, you understand what I'm coming from? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, did you, did anybody at your department, did they ever, like, approach you? Because this is a big thing that, you know, I think as what I talk about, and you probably do too, is, you know, when you start seeing symptoms or signs in one of your fellow officers or firefighters, you know, maybe you should say something, you know, pull them aside, offer some guidance, you know. Did anybody, like, say, hey, Doug, like, you need to get some help or anything like that?
Yes, absolutely. They did. And,
you
know, in my industry, and I'm sure it's the same in your previous employment, Mark, you know, you're surrounded by a bunch of SWAT guys, you know, and the guys that I worked with there and the other units are, you know, seasoned guys, former spec ops guys, special force guys, you name it. And it's, you know, it's a room full of testosterone. And so the unit I was with, we spent many years together. So they saw the transformation. And they would come to me, and the typical response, for example, like one of my closest friends and one of the guys who saved my life, you know, he'd come up to me and go, hey, Doug, man, what's wrong with you? Because I would just have these outbursts, and I was always yelling at people and mad and upset, and I had a crappy attitude. And he would say, hey, Doug, what's wrong? And my response was, you know, what's wrong with you? Ain't nothing wrong with me. I'm fine. And it got progressively worse. And so here in my employment, you could almost, and the same for you, you got chiefs and commanders and lieutenants and all these hierarchy. And I wasn't, I was on the bottom end of it. And I would talk the same way to them. I would go into these briefings with federal, you know, agencies, and somebody would say something I didn't like or want me to do something that I didn't like, and I would be telling them to go, you know what, themselves, and tell, you know, and inappropriate behavior. And they would look at me, and they were like, thank God. They were like, what is wrong with him? That's not the way he is, that's, you know. And I had no idea at the time. I just, that was normal business. And that really, obviously, that wasn't me. I'm not that type of guy.
Did you, and I guess, Karen, you probably noticed as well, you know, at home, probably a lot worse than those guys did, you know, at the station. Now, the, so the Survive First, you know, is this a national thing or is this just Florida? Like, how far does this go?
Well, we are based out of Florida. I mean, that's our home turf, and, you know, we have we know people here. But, no, we are nationwide. We have resources, and we have phenomenal resources that we refer to and use in Utah. We've helped people from Washington to Texas, California. You know, if they call us, we're going to do the best we can to point them in the right direction. So we've aligned ourselves with other nonprofits and better, you know, and resources that specialize in every field.
Yeah. Now with the, so, to the family aspect of it, are you able to, like, if a first responder is maybe having trouble with somebody inside their family and stuff like that, like, this just doesn't, you know, encompass the responder, so to speak, but this can also help with maybe children and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I just had this conversation with the chief today. And it's important that the family and the children get the same sort of treatment. And the reason is I look back on what happened to me and the way I treated my kids. And excuse me, it's not easy because I look back now and, you know, the way I treated my family is unforgivable. But that's why I do what I do to save somebody from going through what we had to go through. And so it's important that a family is well taken care of, because for me, here I am, a guy that carries automatic weapons and is, you know, a high liability guy, and you know what I mean? I'm dealing with hostage situations, and you know, you've seen the TV shows, and and it's my family life. If I'm in that moment, just like a firefighter, if you're going into a building that's on fire, which I think is the craziest thing on the planet, and you go into a house that's on fire, and you had just came from your home where your child, and you are not getting along, or there's an internal family issue, you're not going to be able to do your best job.
Right.
And you can't come to work worrying about that. So, and you know, if your family's impacted, you're going to be impacted. And if you're impacted, you're going to impact your family. It's the big circle. So whatever it takes, obviously, you know, I don't have a PhD in this field. Everything I have is via experience, but I might not, you know, I have a way. And if I don't have a way or I don't know the way, then I will pick up the phone and I have a huge Rolodex of people I can call and ask them, hey, this is the situation we got. Can you help me and point me in the right direction?
And Mark, I think it's I actually like that you brought up the children in the family, because that's such an important piece. Along with what we do for Survive First, I also work for the school board of Brevard County full time as a speech language pathologist. And statistics actually show that 1 in 5 teenagers will be diagnosed with a mental health condition. It's a staggering number. And you know, our kids deal with a lot today. And so you factor in a first responder family, and then a family that's coming through a lot with the trauma that the first responder is dealing with. And that certainly can impact the children even more. So, you know, I love that you brought that up, and thank you, because, you know, that is one of the things that we say, we are a resource for first responders and their families in need of mental health support.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I brought that up is my father was a police officer, also a firefighter as well, but a police officer too. So I grew up in a law enforcement home, and so a lot of my friends growing up were the children of firefighters and police officers. And one thing I noticed, now I don't know any scientific studies on this or anything like that. Well, one thing I noticed, that of all the children that were police officers, kids were either really bad growing up or they became cops. You know, it was like no in between. And I was always curious if there was a study out there that looked at, and the reason why, you know, in my case, I think that happens is because if you're not properly educated as a child on what your parents do, you might see that as opportunity to get away with things. And in my case, I did, because it was a small town and everybody knew everybody. So, you know, you kind of played that fine line. So I'm always curious about that. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know if there's any studies that would proved to be scientific as far as if that's actual or factual, but it's one thing I noticed with the kind of group that I grew up with, you know, and as far as the kids of officers.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I don't know of any studies myself, but I would think that would fall under, you know, the saying you're a product of your society. And, you know, if you, like, for my kids, I've been blessed. Actually, Karen and I have been blessed. We have amazing kids, and we haven't, I say so far, we haven't had any kind of, I've got, my two older boys are in the military, and they're in the spec ops world, and, you know, so maybe they're headed in the direction that I'm in, or I was.
Yeah.
But, you know, you grow up in the household, and you see it, you know, my kids, I didn't wear that fancy blue uniform that cops did. I always had, you know, guns strapped to my chest and, you know, tactical stuff where I was undercover. And that was really all I did. So that's all they witnessed. And they also witnessed their dad come home, and one would only assume the look on my face and then my attitude. You know, it's not easy to come home from of a shooting and, you know, and homicides and or as a firefighter come home from, you know, working crashes and medical calls and somebody who lost their life in a fire. Any of that is a huge impact on children. And you, for me, I was so out of my mind and so consumed in depression and, you know, my suicidal behavior that I forgot about my children, so to speak. You know, I forgot about their mental well-being, and that's something that is hard to I have a hard time forgiving myself for that.
I'm sure they probably, you know, as far as what you're doing now, you know, I'm sure that sets a pretty good example.
I hope so.
Yeah. With my, you know, parents, they always wanted me to go to private school because to kind of protect me from him being a police officer or maybe people finding out, and thought that was more of a safer environment. Well, now, so you're a 501(c). How is what you do funded? Do you work on donations? Do you have fundraisers? Like,
yeah, we do. Actually, I'm gonna let Karen do this. she's better. I'm just the face.
Yes, we are 501(c)(3), and we really do. We function solely on contributions. Like I said, we really are a new nonprofit, and so we have just begun to really start to generate funds. But we have several fundraisers that are being planned in the next between now and 8 months. We will have a big policeman's ball that we're very, very excited about that we'll be hosting next April. We are in the process of planning a big 5K event here in Brevard County for, you know, the entire community to come out and just celebrate first responders. We take
a poker run.
Yep, there's a poker fun run going on that we've been chosen as the beneficiary for that fundraiser, which we are just so grateful for. And then we sell T-shirts also. We have a couple different T-shirts that we sell, but really we do. We rely 100% on contributions from from the public. And so we are just grateful for everything that we receive. We're grateful for our volunteers that come and help us out because really we couldn't do any of this without our volunteers and without the generous people who contribute.
So you you say volunteers are people are able to kind of sign up and start volunteering with you. What type of volunteers are you looking for?
Well, right now, we have just kind of kept it local right now in our community in Brevard County. We've had a few meetings where we've had a good turnout of people in our community that have come out to support us, whether it be through getting address labels for us and packaging up T-shirts for us to wanting to be on a committee for any of our fundraisers. Our website is up and running. It's fully functional, but we are kind of updating it daily. And so, you know, we hope sometime in the near future to have a way that that anyone who wants to help out, you know, and volunteer anyway could go ahead and sign up via our website. So we'd be putting more information out there. But right now it pretty much has been local, but we have been blessed with the turnout with that.
Right. Now, what? So why don't you tell somebody, if a first responder, somebody needs help, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, we have obviously, you know, we have the contact information on our website. And also,
what's the website?
So the website is survivefirst.us. Common spelling, survivefirst.us.
All spelled out, all words, first is not the number. It's survive, and then you spell out
okay.
First.
And obviously we're on social media. That's Facebook and LinkedIn and
Instagram.
I'm not a big social media guy. I might have got it wrong. But
Instagram,
stuff like that. That's Karen's job. And so... and my phone number and email is on there, and I provide my – I use my cell phone, and
okay.
I answer the phone. Being a narcotics agent, I'm used to answering my phone 24 hours a day and SWAT call-outs in the middle of the night, so it's no new surprise to me to get a phone number or get a phone call. So I provide my phone number at is online, obviously, for somebody to find it, and – we're pretty easy to get a hold of.
Do you guys, other than the you know, the fundraising events you have coming up, do you have any trainings coming up that people can attend that you want to share?
I will be pretty much the next few weeks. I will be at local police departments, or I should say, within the state
okay.
of Florida. Anything big, nothing's ringing off the bell right now.
Yeah.
I will just be within the police departments. I don't have any conferences that I know of right now that I'll be speaking at, potentially one in South Florida here soon. But that's about it. We tend to, you know, if somebody calls us and says, hey, can you come? Then I make it a point to go to their department or to their place of employment.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I've spoken at treatment centers and clubs and I say, we all do it. you know, everybody involved, but, you know.
One of the things that we really enjoy doing is keeping it intimate. And when we can travel around to different police departments, fire departments, you know, agencies, either throughout the state of Florida or even outside of the state of Florida, when we can go to a department, it keeps it very intimate, and it makes a huge impact. There is a very personal feel to that. So it's one of the things that we really enjoy doing, which is why we've been adding a whole lot more of the department education pieces.
Yeah. Well, Doug and Karen, I want to thank you both for coming on the show and talking about Survive First. The more resources, I think, available to first responders or where they can go to, you know, get help, the better. I don't think there's enough. So I know it's probably pretty difficult in the beginning, you know, starting up a nonprofit to do this. So I commend you guys for that.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. It's not been an easy task, but we're honored to be part of it, and we're honored to put the hard work into it.
Mark, we also have a toll-free number. That anybody can call who's seeking help. Our email addresses are on the website, but there's also a toll-free number. It's 844-577-7233.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, so once again, Doug and Karen, thanks for coming on. Do you have anything else that you want to share before we end the show?
I don't think I do.
I would like for anybody listening, it is imperative that you keep a close eye out on the people you're surrounded by and make sure that you take the time out to make the check on people and make sure they're okay. And what when you walk down the hallway, go ahead.
Yeah, and another thing, too, I'd like to add to that is if you don't feel comfortable or maybe you don't know what to do, you can always call Survive First or somebody else and get suggestions on how to approach the situation.
Absolutely. And we work immediately with departments on that. You know what I mean? Instead of going the alternative and you know, as we call it in our area, Baker acting or putting them in a hospital or taking them into custody, we have alternative, you know, routes that we can go. And we're available. I mean, if somebody needs me, I'll get there some way, somehow to help out.
Great. Well, Doug and Karen, go ahead, Doug.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having us. And anytime you need us, Mark, we're here for you, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And for the listeners, I have their links on the show page. I'll add your toll-free number. That way there, if you have any, you want to go to the Survive First website. So that's survivefirstspelledout.us. So check out what they're doing. And once again, thank you very much for coming on the show. And you guys are welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, to all your listeners, take care of yourselves and each other.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Take care, buddy. See you soon.
You too. Good night. I want to thank Doug and Karen for coming on. And if you're a first responder out there struggling, reach out to Survive First. Ask questions. They can help you get to resources. They have trainings that they can come to the department and provide, you know, and, you know, get you on a path to recovery or whatever you're going through. And, you know, maybe something as simple as just talking to them. So I want to thank them both for coming on. And I want to thank you all for listening to another episode of Firefighter Wellness Radio for Fire Engineering.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio.